satisfy you. Welcome to Dotcast, episode 297.
Pumpkin Spice Puppies.
I'm Fuzzwolf. Oh, wait,
that's that
fox. I'm Severin.
And I'm Shiva.
Yep. And you were just like, Severin, quit looking at Twitter and get to fucking work.
I was just like, okay, we're all here now. Let's just start recording because we're talking about Rainforest. And as Shiva pointed out, save it for the podcast. Like, we could have this conversation on mic.
It's relevant.
Yep. It's relevant. And then we wouldn't have to repeat ourselves like an alcoholic. You know.
Well, I was actually pulling up the Rainforest thing. That's why I was searching for it.
Shut up. You were muttering to yourself like a grumpy old man. Be like,
fucking
stabbing people.
I'll burn this place down. Keep having a stapler.
I was going to make the joke from the thing and say, I'll stab your parents. And then I remembered, I know your parents. I've met your parents.
That's kind of creepy.
I'm not actually going to say that.
Yeah, that's probably for the best.
Yeah. It's okay in like a we don't know who the fuck these people are kind of third party internet video thing.
They're nebulous. But when you know a dude's parents,
yeah,
you're friendly with a dude's parents, it takes on a kind of harsher meaning.
Okay. So we're all good on the audio there. Okay.
Yeah, Rainforest.
So, yeah,
it was a thing.
The last time we recorded was the Thursday before Rainforest, and then we didn't record last week because of illness. And
the RF con crud.
So this is the for those who don't know, I got con crud from RF, even though I didn't go.
I got the best, gift that keeps on giving.
I got the best part of the con. Seattle virus. So here's the thing I just want to bitch about a little bit. So my schedule right now is that I work 3 days at home and 2 days in the office for my day job. And on Friday, I am sick as a fucking dog because this con crud has just nailed me. And colds hit me harder anyway because my sinuses are all fucked up. So that makes it worse. And my CPAP doesn't work when it can't blow air through the complete clog of my nose and sinuses when I'm that sick.
So you feel like shit because you're not using your CPAP. So
I feel like shit. Because I'm not sleeping. And you have that, you know how you just have that my whole body feels like ass sort of feeling from a cold. So I call my boss and I'm like, I'm really fine, Zach. You know, I'm not calling in, but can I work from home today? Because I have my computer with me. I can easily do my job from the comfort of my home and keep my viruses away from the office. No, no, we have to stick with the schedule. And I'm like, let's fucking bring your cold to work day then.
You know? And cough on him.
And that fucker was working from home that day. Because he just works from home whenever he kind of wants to.
What a shit.
So, you know, and other people pointed out cold germs only hang around for 12 hours out in the atmosphere. So it's like, yeah, so me going over to his desk and coughing all over his keyboard wouldn't actually do anything. But, yeah, you know, and I told Tyr that I complained to him. And he's like, well, you know what? It's not your fault if the whole office gets sick because you did your due diligence and called your boss and tried to keep it away and he wouldn't let you. So that's on him if this virus takes out half the office. I don't know if anybody else got sick. I mean, there's empty cubicles all around me anyway. We got one neighbor and then one annoying person behind me. Mm.
They're not really a neighbor. They're just an annoyance.
They're an annoyance. Yeah. Yeah, dude has people visiting him all day, so it's just like this constant gabble of noise behind me, and it's just like, oh my god, fuck off and do your jobs. Jesus, stop macking with people and get to work, you know? So that's work. So anyway, so I got sick. I've been sick for a week. I'm feeling a lot better now, though. I'm still a little clogged up, but I don't have that at death's door fucking feeling that I did. So that was that's what Tyrone brought me back from Rainforest. Nah, no.
Hopefully less books than before.
Yeah. No sketches, no prints for me or anything. Just disease. Yeah.
How true love.
He did, however, you know, bring me money. from selling books, which I can now turn around and give to the authors.
And use that money that's left over to make more books.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
It is
an endless cycle.
FC in...
No, MFF in December. Yeah. Yep.
The one I forget about all the time.
Yep, MFF and then FC a month later in January. So those are our two more cons for this year. So,
I keep being curious about going to MFF. No.
Yeah.
MFF.
Midwest Fur Fest, yes.
In Chicago.
I kind of just call MFM Method now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because
people know what you mean when you say Method now. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So I think that probably works because MFM is really. Like, they don't even use MFF anymore on Twitter because it's. The hashtag is for another organization or event that's around that time. So they use MWFF. So you might as well just call it FurFest for short, you know? It makes it easier to kind of keep them apart. So Rainforest had, excuse me, a bit going on this year.
They had some troubles.
They had some ups and downs.
A couple.
It's a very mixed bag. So they raised like $10,000 for charity.
Mm-hmm.
Their attendance went up a little bit, 2,704 or something like that.
Yep, 2,704.
Oh, wow. I actually remembered that. Bam.
They had 8 book launches.
Mm-hmm.
They had more panel suggestions they had room for. I'm looking at their website now.
Yeah. They recently posted a big letter to their website, which is what Saverin's referencing now. You can go and read it. It's rainforest.org. And
it's probably their front page thing right now.
So just to give my perspective on it, because I was watching Twitter over the weekend, and because it's the writing con, a bunch of people I know well or work with through For Planet go to this con because, like, all the writers go there. So I'm seeing a lot of information about Rainforest, and I also follow other various people in the fandom. And the reports coming out of Rainforest are sort of schizophrenic because on the downside, they've got this shit's going wrong. Somebody vandalized the hot tub. The toilets in the lobby were damaged, and they're blaming the con for that, but there's no real proof of that, so it might have been an unrelated plumbing issue. There's people getting drunk as fuck and yelling and screaming. There's people... A guy randomly screaming rape repeatedly whenever anybody walked near him in the parking lot on Sunday night, and the cops had to come and take him away.
Fuck's sake.
Just things like that, you know. And then on the other hand, For Planet sales were really good. The new books were very well received. The book launches went well. And I know from all the folks I was following, it appears that the writing track in general went well.
Mm-hmm.
People went to the panels. People enjoyed them. The thing Rainforest does that's really nice is they have a caffeeclatch. It's just an odd word. I forget what its origin is. But basically, it's just this writers kind of get together every morning, and they have, like, breakfast pastries and coffee and stuff like that. And
that's cool.
The con throws all that extra money into basically making like a little writer's hangout every morning.
Yeah.
So people enjoyed that, and there was a lot of networking. Fangs and Fonts did a live podcast. I'm sure that went well. We'll get to hear that probably in a few weeks. And so, like, from all the writers I'm following, like, everybody had a good time. They're hanging out. They're meeting folks for the first time, going to panels. And it was like a generally positive experience. Mm-hmm. And the dealer's room was steady. There were people in there all weekend long. So, like, our guys behind the table, like, never really got a break. It was pretty constant.
It's a good problem to have.
Yes.
For the financials, at least.
Yeah. I'm just saying, you know, that's the good thing. Mm-hmm. So it kind of depends a little on your perspective and who you were hanging out with and what you saw. Didn't you put that on? Oh, you unmuted it when you tested the audio, right?
It's my phone, actually.
Oh, okay. So that really interests me because, like, a lot of times an event will either be universally awesome or everyone will say, yeah, it was a shit show, never go back again. But this one is like it had its ups and its downs, you know. But the con itself has come out and posted that letter and said some shit went down, some people got way fucking out of control, and they're now worried about losing this hotel. So they have the contract for 2016. They're going to be at that hotel next year. And depending how 2016 goes, will determine whether they could stay there in 2017. And part of the problem in Seattle that I saw somebody say is a similar problem to what we have in Dallas. There's like, that's the largest hotel in that kind of size range. And then you jump to the place where they have PAX.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot kind of in the middle.
So I think a lot of what you're talking about comes from – it is perspective. So you have the people – I mean, the people that are going to tweet on a hashtag are largely people, I'm having a fucking great time. This is awesome.
Right.
And then you have the people that are seeing the fucked up shit.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is that, like, John Q. Furfag doesn't understand the level of work that goes into a con. They don't understand the levels of money involved, the necessity of having good relations with the hotel and stuff like that, and that a very small minority of dumbasses can fuck everything up for everybody.
See OklaCon.
Oh, you and know, we should actually mention that because that's happened since our last episode, didn't it?
No, we discussed it.
Yeah,
Did we discuss it?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I have a memory like a sieve.
So. OklaCon is kill and Rainforest is under threat because it doesn't have to be a huge gang of morons.
It's it could just be one person a couple doing something. Of
very dedicated morons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were say they had to pull five badges. Well, that's five people, but that five people could cause a lot of issues.
Right. I think we've only pulled one badge in the course of Fiesta that I know of.
Yeah. You know, they're saying that
and one band. You know,
the Hilton has told them that they have sustained more damage during Rainforest than from every other event at the Hilton the entire rest of the year.
That includes, like, AnimeCon.
That doesn't even include damage to guest rooms or other incidental wear and tear like the elevators.
They also had the other statement they made was that the badges they pulled this year was more badges than they'd pulled all the other years of Rainforest together.
That's sad.
This year's incidents includes two plumber calls, a flooded bathroom that soaked the offices underneath, towels stuffed into a hot tub pump, and multiple petty vandalism and thefts. The final damage report is still being compiled. And let me tell you a thing. So last year at Nightmare Nights, some dumb motherfucker sat down on a glass tabletop, chipped the edge, took the corner off. That stupid piece of shit cost $250 to replace. There was a vase in a suite that was in our room block, but we weren't responsible for. Shitty little piece of shit vase. $150 fucking. So think about those little piddly bits of nonsense and the level of damage that the Hilton says that they're having to deal with and how much they're going to charge.
Hotels upcharge for everything.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
If they can get milk people for money, they will.
And this is what's killer. It's like a flooded bathroom that soaked offices underneath. Boy fucking howdy. If there's computer damages. I mean, this is definitely a event insurance type thing. This is a nightmare. And, you know, they sent three people to the hospital and called the police twice. And by Sunday morning of the con, the hotel was so exasperated they were threatening to evict attendees for a single noise complaint. One of the fun things about noise complaints is that oftentimes if the room block is underneath an event, the event is charged – basically the event has to pay for the aggrieved party's room nights.
Oh.
So there's that too.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So this is, you know, this is why, from my perspective, they're – I mean, John Q. Furry went and had fun. And there was a few bad actors. But at the actual hotel, the event, the con side of things, the LLC, the 501c7, whatever organization level it is, mm-hmm. is on the kind of on the fucking ropes because they're looking at getting a huge bill from the hotel. And you know, I know, Fiesta knows, thankfully we haven't had issues with that really in the past, that the hotel's going to upcharge out the butt for everything. And, you know, this is a glass tabletop you can go and buy for, you know, $25 somewhere, $150. A vase that looks like it came from the fucking dollar store. Nope, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They have to go through their suppliers and you have to pay that.
And their suppliers also upcharge hotels at the woo-wah.
So, you know, I'm looking at it from this angle and going, holy shit. And yeah, they do have one more year under contract. But, you know.
Yeah, I mean, hotels can pull contracts.
Yeah, hotels can. But it really depends on, I guess, Rainforest's ability to pay for the damages this mm-hmm. year. Because they're going to have to pay for the plumbing fix. They're going to have to pay for the water damage. They're going to have to pay.
Mm-hmm.
Their event insurance is going to make them pay. Or, well, they're going to have to make an insurance claim, I'm pretty sure. And that's going to up their event insurance rates a ton.
Yeah.
Next time.
Yeah. Well, like, I'm handling the event insurance for Nightmare Nights here, and because we didn't have a claim, our rates went down by 25%.
Nice. But I
imagine that if we did have a claim, they would go spike. Up.
Yeah.
And so it's really just a few bad apples, but goddamn, these apples are really poisonous.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, all it took was four fuckers to kill OklaCon.
Yeah.
Three morons deciding to get drunk and high and bang a chick in the public, and then one person to tattle on them to their new place. And now you've got this group of bad actors with Rainforest.
Yeah.
You know, it really does behoove the fandom to be like, to shut these people the fuck down.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you see people pulling shit, that you inform, you name, you snitch.
Snitches get scritches.
Yes, I saw that.
Because that's my unofficial con theme for Rainforest next year.
Yeah.
If you see something, say something. If you don't say something, then this incident could be what kills this con and they won't come back. I mean, all it takes is either... And because you don't know if this incident is going to be one of many, and you're not aware of all the other bullshit that's gone on the weekend, this might be one of the nails that just puts a nail in the coffin. So if you see something, go, you know, either go get security, go get the hotel, just kind of go, hey, that's not cool, dude.
Yeah, the chairman's letter ends out with, we know that people come to conventions to have a good time, and we want to facilitate that, but a few people's fun has gotten way out of hand. On behalf of everyone who comes to Rainforest, we're asking you to please help us raise the standards of the convention. Speak up and be a voice for better behavior. If we don't start taking better care of our hotel, we'll lose access to it. And then nobody gets to have fun at Rainforest anymore. Because, I mean, the level of work and time and effort and cash and personal money that goes into running a con. We saw that firsthand. We started Fiesta.
Mm-hmm.
You saw that. I've seen this firsthand doing Nightmare Nights.
And then every year going forward,
you know,
doing those cons. I mean,
hundreds and thousands of hours that we've all poured forth into making this convention, our conventions run, and that a handful of bad actors can just fuck everything.
Yeah.
It terrifies me, to be honest. Like, to see, you know, with OklaCon, that was just, holy fuck, what?
And, yeah, that was a shock.
You know, and now Rainforest is in trouble, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, yeah, just a few bad apples can really fuck everybody over. And we need to do better.
Mm-hmm.
We need to tell people to cut that shit out.
Or else we won't have this anymore.
Yeah. So there's us being, you know, the old farts that run the cons, telling you, holy crap, you damn kids, get your shit together.
Because, yes, there's been many cons, not necessarily furry cons, but there's been anime cons and other who have gotten shut down from people breaking shit in the hotel and doing dumb ass crap. And if we don't police our own, then they'll take away our toys.
Pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, come on. We're not bronies here. We can run cons successfully. Yeah. We need to get our act back together again. Right, Savern?
Yep. It's not the attendees that are causing the pony community cons to suffer. It's the market contracting. But that's neither here nor there.
Like an anus.
Yep. Should have used more lube.
Yeah.
So there's that heavy subject out of the way. I mean, it's good that people had fun at Rainforest, and we got a couple of con reports, but...
Dot, dot, dot.
Dot, dot, dot.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. In other news, I got gifted a copy of Undertale. That's a cute little RPG game.
Hmm.
That's cute.
Which one's that?
It's a game by Toby Fox. Mm-hmm. It's a retro-style RPG. People compare it favorably to Earthbound. It is a RPG where you can handle things non-violently.
Is this one with mice?
No.
Okay.
No.
Toby Fox says you can play Undertale.
And it's very cute, very charming. It has weird enemies in it, like the Sundare plane. It is a airplane that has an anime wig on, and it's an enemy that pops up in one section, and you have to figure out how to beat it. And you talk to it and flirt to it, and it has a little text bubble that calls up. It's like, it's not like I like you or anything, but baka, you know. And the key to being able to defeat the Sundare plane without killing it is when the enemies attack, you're this little heart icon, and you have to move the heart icon around inside this box to dodge the bullets. Well, this particular one, it's the airplanes. There's airplanes zipping down that have a green R around them. You can't touch the white part, but if you touch the green part, airplane starts blushing. It's getting close. It's brushing up against you, but it's not touching you.
Oh, God.
And it's the goofiest thing. It is utterly magical. It's like $10. You should check it out. On Steam.
There's something Cyan was playing. It was basically kind of Redwall-esque. You were basically mice and moving around a very...
A grid, hex-based grid?
Yeah.
That's our Mellow.
That looked really pretty and really cute.
It is super furry.
It is. And like I said, it looked like Redwall.
A wolf, a bunny, I think a mouse, and something else. And yeah, it's a board game a digital board game. And there's an expansion that's another four characters that's like a ferret, a fox, and a couple other characters that are like exclusives for the time being for whatever their Kickstarter backers or whatever. But yeah, it's really cute and really funny. There was a Penny Arcade comic where it's like, this cutesy bunny, like, talking hot shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I think saw that. Your smack talk is not in keeping with the character of this game.
I'll stab your parents!
But yeah, between... There's a bunch of good furry content. Actually, you probably have seen the characters from Undertale. Mm-hmm. There's the main character people calling Goat Mom. That, you know, people are drawing lots of porn of this character.
Because furries.
Because she's like one of the first characters you encounter in the game.
Oh, okay.
And she's
like, is she a MILF?
I guess. your character is like an 8-year-old kid, but you know people are like, oh, she's very matronly and motherly and tries to take care of you and tries to protect you. And then like right after that, you meet two skeletons, one named Sans and one named Papyrus, and they're like. Sans, his text is always in Comic Sans.
Oh, and yes.
Papyrus.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Papyrus. And I've been streaming that and doing silly voices for them and reading the text. So, you know, Papyrus has a very silly voice like that. And Sans talks a little like this because he's a goofy little Comic Sans skeleton. It's fun. like and subscribe. No. I've put like 90 minutes into it, but obviously I'm a little busy right now, so...
Oh, just a tidge.
So I'll get around to it. I'll get around to finishing it after everyone's like done and like, oh, on to the next indie darling.
Uh-huh.
But whatever.
Indie darling.
It's $10. Indie darling. And MDefMet gave me a copy of that.
Okay.
And actually, he has a new podcast, which I have participated in inadvertently a couple times.
Yes.
Oh.
It's called the Freaking Amazing Podcast. I linked it on the Notcast Twitter account. He put up the pilot, which he recorded back in June. He He and him bullshit and a couple other friends of theirs are like just doing a random bullshit ramble cast.
Mm-hmm.
And I've inadvertently been on the show a couple times because it's like, oh, hey, I'm doing a call. Want to join? Yeah, sure. And we end up talking. It's like, well.
So it's the fuck boys cast.
Sure.
We were discussing the etymology of the word fuckboy earlier and its various meanings.
Yeah. So there was that. Yeah, it's like, hey, I'm doing a call. Want to join? Yeah, sure. End up on another podcast. It keeps happening.
I can't escape.
I talk so much. Jesus Christ.
My voice. So.
Yeah, fuckboy. That's a weird term.
Yeah. Why so don't...
at this point, yeah, we're about 30 minutes into the episode.
We should read an email.
We should read some emails.
Do we want to start with this RF Con report then, since it's kind of on topic?
Yeah, for... might as well.
Okay. Raid first con report. Greetings, couch, sleeve, and knot. Dragon Man Mike here, and I'm emailing in to give you my belated Rainforest Con report. So just to premise this report, this Rainforest was both a great time and a total clusterfuck for me.
Woo!
Sounds about the same as for most people. I will get into the details shortly. So I arrived at the Hilton about noon on Thursday. I had originally intended to attend from Wednesday, but lack of funds made it easier to come a day later. It was only a 2.5-hour drive from Vancouver, BC. Savored there is an amazing Brody called Brody Can that happens in Vancouver, just FYI, and a beautiful day to make the trip.
I am aware of that convention.
Okay. Is that an official endorsement or not? Just you're aware.
I am aware. I haven't had that. Actually, we had the invitation to go there for the Pony Podcast I do as community guests.
Mm-hmm.
I just wasn't able to make it one year. The year we were, so.
That's too bad.
Yeah, we were going to fly out. I was going to fly out to California. We're going to take the train up there.
Oh, that would have been cool.
But I couldn't swing it.
Oh, that's too bad. It sounded like it would have been fun. Oh, well.
It would have been fun. But I didn't get to go.
Maybe in the future. One day, we'll get to the fabled Canadas.
Yep.
One day.
We can infiltrate their strategic maple syrup reserve.
Yes. Oh, my God. Got to go and see that. Like the way Canadians come down here and go see the Hoover Dam or something like that. I was like, no, we want to see your fucking strategic maple syrup reserve.
This fucking mountain of 55-gallon drums of syrup.
I'm going to roll on this all the way home. Just ride the barrel of maple syrup. Woo-hoo! Right over the border. And back to the email. Already in progress. As soon as we got to the hotel, that's when things started to go wrong. I had used the Hilton's early online check-in system so I could just pick up my keys and relax in the room. Well, that didn't happen. I arrived at the lobby, expected to pick up my keys, and I was promptly informed my room was not ready. I asked how long it would be, and they said around 3 p.m. Mildly annoyed, I acquiesced and went to go get some lunch with my mates and friends. 3 p.m. rolled around, and I went to go get my keys, where I was again informed, it's not ready yet, we'll call you. Very annoyed now, I parked my car to go... Excuse me, I'm very stuffed up, and this is the most out loud reading I've done in a while.
Breathe, Fuzz.
I can't breathe through my nose, and I'm talking with my mouth, so it's difficult. Very annoyed now, I parked my car in the garage and went to go get my reg. Halfway into the line, I got the call. That was about 3:30. So I get my keys, finally able to go relax in the room after getting up early to make it to the hotel. We get into our room and it's the wrong room type. They gave us a room with a single king bed when we needed a room with two doubles. We had four people in our room. This is something that struck me as really ridiculous about hotels. So they're like, we can't promise you what type of room you'll get. And I'm like, how can you not confirm that when you know people are going to be deciding how many roommates that they're going to have? And yeah, it's like four people in a room, but what do you expect, like four people to cram in a king bed together? Or
maybe
just
they're very friendly,
everybody gets to sleep on the floor. I mean,
they just get to curl up in a ball and
yeah,
hope they don't get kicked off.
Yeah. Like a pet. It's so ridiculous to me that hotels do that. Like,
well, maybe if you're a couple that has two pets, they can sleep at your feet.
Yeah.
There we go.
And that will be our next email. Very pissed now, I stormed down to the lobby and spoke with the manager. I was informed that they rushed my check-in since I was waiting and gave me the first room available. But kudos to the manager, we were promptly and without fuss moved to the proper room type. After that, I hung out with roomies and did my first suiting on a budget panel, which went awesome. Then went back to the room for drinks before suiting up and heading to the dance. But while we were out, the hotel changed the room again and rearranged all the furniture and took one of the beds out.
What?
No. I was just seeing if you were paying attention. That was just Thursday. Friday comes along and I have a grand time fursuiting, running a couple panels, including fursuit charades and the tail making workshop. Wasn't much drama this day, thank God. Late into the evening, I got handfout with peeps who came by our room, and by 1 a.m., I was beat and passed out on the bed. See? The bed, single. Told you, they took one of the beds.
They just carried the whole fucking thing out. So it's a single twin now.
Yes. I cut one of the beds in half. Saturday is where it got fun. Yeah. The daytime went really well. I got to peruse the artist alley, but didn't make it into the dealer's den. After that, it was the fursuit parade, and that was so much fun. Used my new selfie stick to take lots of selfies and pics with other suitors. But about about 2 p.m., one of my friends texts me and asks if I can come down and get her from the lobby. Turns out her psycho ex had come to the con with the intention of stalking her and she needed a way out. Oi. So after rescuing her and hiding in the room for a while, we did a lot of that. I loved it, so chill. After hide and chill. After dinner and a few drinks, my friend and I all decide to hang out in the lobby and play Uno. This is where we spot the drunkest furry I have ever seen. He was so intoxicated, he began screaming and running around because lost his wine. After the Uno fest, we went back to the room where I spotted my roommate talking to her ex. She was so upset, she was in tears, and we spent the rest of the night drinking the tears away until haha.
I think he might have dictated this, perhaps.
Maybe, I don't know.
Until late, I'm going to assume.
Sunday was super chill. Spent some time in the dealer's den and suited some. Had some relationship drama with another friend, and then got to hear about all the shenanigans that the other attendees were up to.
And their appearance in the news.
Thank you. Highlight of the con was being able to pass out the fursuiter tags all weekend. The feeling of power that comes with it. Ah. All in all, it was an okay con. There was a lot of stress in the beginning and lots of drama throughout, but I had fun for the most part. I don't think I'll be going back next year since I will be getting married 2 weeks before and definitely won't be able to afford it. Well, congratulations. Upcoming. Plus, I would like to attend other cons like BLFC and Vancouver. Sorry for the novel. I hope Shiva didn't get this.
Nope.
Fuzz, I'm looking forward to seeing you at a con soon. Savern, your audio work is amazing and I'm jealous of your sexy voice. Shiva, stay multi-lummed.
Lummed?
Yes. Multi-lummed and awesome. Toodles, Dragon Man Mike.
So, yay. Yeah.
Thank you.
His particular drama seemed to have been mainly interpersonal, but yeah.
Yeah, not COD-related.
One thing
such.
I did want to point out that it did get... That a dude from The Stranger, Seattle's alternative weekly, who Dan Savage works for, actually did attend the con and had a very fun time, they said. It was a very positive write-up from their local alternative weekly.
I've seen it linked. I have not had a chance to read it yet. But that's really cool. Zia and he were exchanging tweets.
Yeah, they interviewed Kyle.
Cool.
And talked about Out of Position and whatnot. So I was like, that's cool. Didn't mention the audiobooks. Darn it. Oh.
And you immediately got on the phone and started screaming at Kyle for not properly pimping your material.
No. So that was cool. Though the comments I've seen from various furries are like, oh, from what I heard, it was a disaster. And I'm like, and then it goes back to the whole attendee versus convention runner perspective thing. But they did get some positive coverage in the local media.
Right.
And the local alt media is where you're going to find the weirdos that'll probably attend.
Mm-hmm. And I will say, some shit went down. There was the picture that hit Twitter.
Yeah.
The guy in a diaper in the lobby with his pants down.
And a pup mask and no shoes on.
Yeah.
He just had to compound it.
Right. And
diaper,
like,
and no shoes? You fucking monster.
No shoes, no service. You and your diaper, get the fuck out of here.
No pants.
So there were some there were some issues like that. But I know some folks like really focus on the negative and like will try to make it seem like worse than it was. I'm not saying it wasn't bad, especially since the con came out and said it was bad. I'm just saying for some people, their weekend was not completely colored by those events, and they still went and had an enjoyable time. Oh. A lot of your convention enjoyment is attitude.
Yeah, and a lot of people, if you're having a good time, you're not going to bother to go shit up the con hashtag.
Right, yeah. But some people do just like to shit up the con hashtag, even if like a lot of people were shitting it up who weren't even there.
Of course.
And, you know, because some people just like to add to the drama. It's like the picture, the little drawing of the coyote, where he's like, ooh, is this some drama? And he throws himself into the mud puddle and starts rolling around in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people are like that. They're like, ooh, drama's happening at a furry con. But, you know, don't make it worse. You know, we don't want our cons to get shut down. You know, try to sort of reel in the criticism a little bit. Address criticism, genuine criticism, if you were there, directly to the con staff so that they can improve or take your suggestions on board.
Angry subtweets doesn't help the con staff improve your experience.
Right. And, you know, I'm not saying put a polish on this turd, put a positive spin on things where shit went genuinely wrong. I'm just saying don't add to the shit pile, you know. Or just kind of try to keep a more balanced perspective.
Yep. Okay, so let us move on. So I'm just going to go down here to the bottom. And this is an anonymous for you, Fuzz.
Okay.
Hey, Fuzz, what are you thinking of of Doctor Who so far? I'm really loving Missy.
Okay, so real quick, Shira Saverin, have you watched any Doctor Who this season?
I haven't seen it for like the last three. I haven't seen.
I know you've been out of the loop for a while.
I watched half of last season, and then I still need to catch up, finish it, and then watch the season.
Okay, so, and I know there's probably a lot of people at home too that are not fully up to date.
Like last season,
Missy. Well, I was going to say I'm not going to spoil anything for season 9. So, well, I guess I can't really spoil who Missy is since you haven't seen the end of season 8.
She's
so.
Like the bad guy woman that's kind of been floating around the edges, like at the end of the
right,
episodes.
Yeah. But who is she really?
Yeah, no, I don't know that.
Okay, so I'm not going to spoil that. Okay, well, Missy comes back in the beginning of season 9. I mean, that's known. She's been in the promotional material and stuff like that. The first two episodes are a two-parter. And I don't want to reveal the other bad guys in it because it wasn't promoted like that, and it's kind of a surprise.
Yeah.
It happens right like the pre-title credits sequence, and you're just like, fuck, this is going to be really interesting. But for first two episodes, I really enjoyed it. Like, it feels almost like classic Who, just a cracking good episode, you know, just a really fucking solid episode, really good dialogue, character stuff. I mean, Capaldi really coming into his own in the role and everything, you know. I just, everybody in it is just amazing, you know. And oh, and fuck the haters, I love Clara. You know, especially in these episodes, and then the third episode was part one of two. It ended on a cliffhanger as well. And that cliffhanger was actually a really good, oh, fuck, cliffhanger. And the follow-up to that will be this coming Saturday in 2 days. So I'll be looking forward to seeing part two of that. There's some great character interaction in that between Clara and the Doctor. I will say one part that was quite funny is the second two-parter, people are dying and they're becoming ghosts. And, of course, their Doctor is initially, he's like, there's no such thing as ghosts, you know. And then he realizes that, oh, they actually are ghosts. And he's talking to the other people in this base, the rest of the cast. They're like, aren't you just fascinated by this? Don't you just want to ask him questions until your throat falls out? And Clara points out, Doctor, this guy was their friend and he's dead. And the doctor's looking confused, like, what's the problem? Clara pulls out a stack of index cards from her pocket, and she starts flipping through them. And you can pause them and see different things that are written on them. And they're all very amusing. And basically, they're correct emotional response cards. So she hands one to the doctor, and the doctor reads it verbatim. Says, I'm terribly sorry about the loss of your friend / family member / pet. And everyone in Clara looks at him like... And it's just, I love that they've developed their relationship. She knows how to handle 12. She knows what he needs. And she's got these things all prepared and everything. It's just this wonderful little character moment between them. And I'm going to be so heartbroken when Clara's supposed to leave this season.
Yeah.
Which is about right. You know, doctors last about 3 years. So you want a companion out in 2.5, because she had a good season and a half with Matt Smith and a full season and a half with Peter Capaldi. You know, that's a good run for her. I mean, I'd love some companions to stick around forever, but ideally you want each doctor to have sort of multiple characters to interact with.
So it's because they each add a different dimension to
Yeah.
And so far, Clara is basically helping the doctor act more human, I suppose.
Yeah, like...
Or compassionate.
The thing they're doing... Well, like, they sort of explained it in season 8, when it's like, yeah, she's my carer. She cares so I don't have to. The initial concept with 12 is that he's going to be more alien, mm-hmm. more distant, you know, and bring back the idea that the doctor's not human. He's not necessarily going to value the same things that we value and react to things the way we react to them. And this was sort of reminiscent of the first doctor, the fourth doctor, the sixth doctor. Like, they've all had that element in a little more abundance, that sort of alienness. And then other doctors, like 5 and 8, are a little more human. So they've kind of done that with him. And, like, he almost seems a little bit aspy in the way that he doesn't quite know how to emotionally respond in mm-hmm. an appropriate manner to humans. And it's funny because, like, this character is someone that I probably could not stand being around in real life. Mm-hmm. But Capaldi is such a brilliant actor, and it's the Doctor, and he's just amazing to watch in the role. And I'm really enjoying where they're going with the character. And I really like the contrast of having the older Doctor back as well, as a contrast to the younger guys that we've had in the previous two incarnations. And so while I'm geeking out, I'm going to continue on that thread. Sorry about this really long answer to like a 2-sentence Tumblr ask, but
they poked the bear.
So you probably heard me talk about Big Finish Productions before, mm-hmm. who do the audio, like radio plays of Doctor Who. So I talked before about how they mostly cover the classic series, and then they got some licensing rights to some elements of the current series. So they got River Song, Weeping Angels, Modern Day Suntarans. The other thing that they've announced, they're doing a series of 4 box sets with the War Doctor,
mm-hmm,
taking place during the Time War with John Hurt. So that's awesome thing one. Like, they're actually going to tell a big chunk of Time War stories with that character that we've only seen on screen the one time, and then there's some novels. But also, along with that, before that, as a prequel, there is going to be an 8th Doctor Time War box set. I shot my time juice all over Twitter when I saw that.
Yes.
So I'm like, I'm always
the sound up. You heard just a moment ago was his time rotor hitting the table.
Yes. I'm always up for more Eighth Doctor stuff. And I knew that there's a series of Eighth Doctor ones coming out called Doom Coalition. And the second part of that, River Song, is going to be in it. So that'll be interesting. And then they announced this Time War prequel as well. So it's going to be Eight fighting to survive during the early days of the Time War before he goes to Karn and regenerates. And then we'll have four box sets of John Hurt playing the War Doctor. And it's just, fucking Big Finish. They're on fire right now. Like, they just keep getting better and better with this stuff. I just can't wait. Their production quality is so fucking good. And because the executive producer is Nick Briggs, the guy who plays the Daleks on the TV, so the Daleks in Big Finish sound exactly like the ones in the TV show. So there's like a real continuity between all that stuff. So it's just great. It's a fantastic time to be a Doctor Who fan right now.
Sweet.
This has been Whofers. and now on to the rest of Notcast.
I was going to say, you and Teal should do a couple of those.
You know, maybe we should pick that up again. It's just
a matter of having the time.
It's time, well, yeah.
That's kind of why I haven't been caught up with Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Is, like, time. And, like, post-PonyCon, me and my friend Leatherneck, we're going to do a Jun Maeda-thon. He's a anime director that we've decided we both like.
Oh, okay.
So we're going to go through a couple of series that he's like, oh, dude, we've got to watch this. Because we've watched two series that he's written.
Mm-hmm.
Charlotte, and we've started Angel Beats, and we're both really digging it. And he's like, he's a big fan, and I'm finding I like it. So we're gonna do a marathon of the dude's series after that. We should do like a Doctor Who time-a-thon at some point.
Oh, okay.
Too. So just so we can catch up on the key episodes of the last couple seasons, because I haven't watched it in like 3 years.
Yeah, yeah. And catch you up on everything.
Yeah, yeah. Just we need to do that like.
Post Nightmare Nights. Yeah, you know how we usually take our break between late November, December. Well, because the holidays, people are out of town, people are coming into town, and it's crazy. You know, during that time, we could do it then when we're not recording, and maybe set aside a little time on a weekend or something.
Just sit down, watch it, record it, and watch it, and then be like, "So, what did you think?" It was pretty cool. The Doctor fought some aliens, and shit blew up, and everybody died. Except the Doctor and his companion, because that's how this goes.
Sometimes he saves people. I'll let the ball suffocate. Ah, just kidding. So, which is actually in an episode.
All right, so Shiva, read an email. Take your pick. There are many. Choose wisely. Because then we need to go and save.
Just waiting for it to refresh. Did we not get any Tumblrs? Oh, we got a couple Tumblrs.
There's one from Jeezy. There's
one left. The others we read.
Let's see. I'll just do that and finish up the Tumblrs.
Okay.
Let's see. It's from Jeeves. Do the casters think that competition is a good thing to encourage or a bad thing? This can apply to schooling, the workplace, or just general social interaction. Does it create problems by making people regard one another as potential adversaries or promote the creation of newer, better ideas that might not have come about without someone else to push their development? I think it really depends on the personalities involved.
Mm.
I don't do well with competition. I do well with cooperative. I don't like the pressure. It's not a good pressure for me to compete with anybody because, well, there's something in the back of mind that says, yeah, I know I'm not the best. I know I'm not going to be number one. Why bother trying? Because I'm just going to fail. Whereas if I work with people, I achieve more rather than working against people. I think it's really personality dependent.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise. So in my greater podcasting experience, I have done a great deal of bridge building among various producers and content creators, and so I much prefer to get along with folks, even if I don't like. I don't necessarily these people creating content in sort of the same space I do, and we all kind of put our stuff out there, and we're not shit talking each other or whatever.
our content kind of stands.
Well, you are, but only off mic. No, kidding.
And so, like, you know, there are people in the same space doing like the pony audio stuff, but nobody is out shitting on me, and I'm not shitting on anybody else. We're putting our content out there and letting people consume it. I came to that game really way too late, and it's kind of a shame because I should have been doing that since the start because I was doing audio stuff anyway. But I was a tard and thought, oh, nobody will accept my audio reading because I'm a dude. Well, I was just being dumb. So I should have been doing it since the start, but what can you do? I just joke and say, next fandom, but I'm not going to do fandom like this. I'm not getting neck deep. I'm just going to go be your average furry. And I'll be reading stuff from Fur Planet. FurPlanet.com. Buy my book. Like and subscribe.
6 months later, Severn reading Steven Universe and a deep hole.
Oh, fuck no.
Steven Universe fanfic.
Jesus Christ. No, 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 no.
From sufic.com.
No, 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 no. Just get the gif of that cat going, no, 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 and loop it forever.
That poor badger that runs away and falls down the...
So, anyways, I think competition is good in if it's positively done, where it's like, who's going to be the best to represent our thing, not if you're not the best, you're shit, go kill yourself.
Competition is good for trade.
Yes.
That's a furry position. Yes.
Rub your earlobes.
No, I have to rub yours. You're the fennec.
Umox.
Umox. They
can't see me shaking my head.
She was just like, this nerd. God.
The last 10 minutes, nerds. We've just kind of gotten nerd over 9,000. But...
Which itself is a nerd reference.
Ugh, fuck. So if this was happening on Twitter, somebody would reply right now and say, I'm a bigger nerd than you. And it's sort of like, and that's the kind of competition that I really hate.
Yeah.
That this is very prevalent in geek spaces.
It drives me nuts.
This need to one-upmanship, you know.
Somebody states a fact, somebody states a more anal fact, and it starts...
Well, actually...
Yeah. You know, and then people start, you know, just making shit up, and you're just like, whatever. Be like, oh, I met Paul McGann at a convention, you know, and someone else is like, yeah, well, I sucked Paul McGann's dick.
You know, that was exactly the reference I was going to... I was thinking of, but you made it before I could.
Oh, wow. And I had somebody say that once, not about Paul McGann, actually, funny enough, about Voltaire. Because I was like...
That they sucked Voltaire's dick?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'd suck his dick. He's a very pretty man. Oh,
yeah. I'm not saying that I wouldn't suck Voltaire's dick, but I'm saying I was like, yeah, I met him at this con up in Jacksonville. Yeah, he was cool. He signed some CDs for me. Oh, yeah, he was... This other guy, oh, yeah, he was totally cool. I met him at Dragon Con. He took me to bed, and I sucked him off, and I was like...
Really?
Okay. I mean...
He's now a bigger fan than me? Is that how it works?
I guess you're listening to Voltaire's more valid? I should just go burn my CDs now? Where are we going with this? What point are you trying to make?
Is that him?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Voltaire.
I've heard his music. I never saw a picture of him.
Very pretty.
Yeah,
he's very smart.
Pretty smart goth boy. Like, man. Goth man.
Like, we got to go see him at the church here in town.
Yeah, that's
right.
And
that was really cool.
And we both sucked his dick.
Totally.
Together. Yeah.
So we're bigger fans than other people. No, but I mean, that's kind of where I'm going with that. It's like, you know.
It's competition and shit that doesn't matter.
Wow, it got really warm here today. It was 85 degrees. Oh, yeah, well, I'm in Iraq, and it's 138. And I
baked a cake in my Humvee.
Yeah, it's like I'm not okay. I stuck my dick in a volcano, and that was hotter. Fuck you. I mean,
like gold so much, I put my dick in a vat of molten gold, and I became an Austin Powers movie. Fuck.
Right? It's just, it seems really... really ludicrous.
Well, you know, I've got more of this.
My computer has more gigs of RAM than yours does. My iPhone just... I just got an iPhone 5. Fuck you, I have a 6S. Thump.
Well, it was like at dinner, I was kind of lamenting the fact that my computer won't play current gen games.
Yeah.
Like, I can't play the Battlefront, Star Wars Battlefront. You know
why? Because you're a lame fucking noob.
Pretty much. No. Well, I have a computer that's nearly 5 years old, and it's worked very well for me. And I just kind of sigh, I shrug and sigh. We need to replace Panther's laptop, but first, because his is older than my iMac.
Yeah.
And so I'm not like, oh, we got to do this. I'm just like, eh, whatever. There are plenty of video games I haven't played, and my computer will still play. Mm-hmm. So if I'm going to do videos or stream or whatever, I'll just play that. But it's just one of those things where it's like, I see, when I see that, oh man, the Battlefront beta is going on, I'll just watch people play it and think, mm-hmm. make my opinions of it known there. And maybe if I end up getting like a PlayStation 4 or a X-Bone, mm-hmm. I'd probably end up getting an X-Bone, I think, if I get one of the two.
We won our PlayStation 4, so yeah.
Well, that was like, I saw that...
it took the decision out of our hands.
Vermi, actually Bravo, Bravo won a gold PlayStation 4 via a Taco Bell promotion.
See, his is better than yours, Shiva, because it's gold.
Yeah, totally.
This is what we're talking about. It's still
free. I don't care.
Yeah. What's cool is like it's... it comes with like Destiny the Taken King, which is like the far more complete version of Destiny. So it's like only a year on and $120 in, if you bought in from the beginning, it's now actually a decent game.
Shit.
But people that buy in now for only $60 get the good content out of the gate.
Wow.
Yeah. It's the nature of things. Well, it's like if you're played WoW, you know, and this is something Shiva and I can agree on. We're like, we've been playing for a very, mm-hmm. very long time. And being the type of fans we generally are, we buy the CEs. And those are like $80 a pop.
Well, usually someone in my household buys the collector's edition. We don't need three copies of it. So I personally don't usually buy it.
Well, but your household buys a collector's edition and then two more copies of the game because there's three of you.
Yeah, we don't need three copies of art books or whatever.
But then your fanness would be validated three times as much.
Only one of you gets the stupid mount that you'll never use because you have a favorite already.
Mm.
Yeah. How about that? How is this status of dick waving in that doesn't
that
matter?
Fucking bird that when you got it, mm-hmm. the Night Raven mount or whatever, then you originally you couldn't ever use it in the current content.
Yeah, yay.
But I have it.
Yeah, except it looks dumb. It uses the Protodrake skeleton and therefore looks goony.
It does.
But you were saying you think it's a function of age or something?
Well, I think it is a function of age where it's like you kind of look at it and you're like, huh, oh well, instead of... Fuck me, I've got to upgrade my computer. God damn this. I got to get a GTX 970 Titan Black Elite plus one, you know.
Thump.
And I got to play this game on Ultra. I'd like to. That'd be nice. But it's not like a driving force.
There's a thing, a motto, I guess you'd say, or a phrase that I see a lot online that I think is pretty accurate. Is that the only person you should be competing against is yourself.
Yeah.
You know, try to be a better you than you were yesterday or 5 years ago or whatever. But everyone's life story is so different. So don't compare yourself to somebody else to be like, well, they have the gold-plated PlayStation and I don't, or whatever.
A good phrase is don't compare your daily life to someone else's highlight reel.
Yeah, that's actually very interesting. I don't know if you read the same article I did. This is a couple years ago, but they're talking about like the Facebook effect.
Oh yeah,
you know, and how like you're reading Facebook, right? And you're seeing all these posts, and they're always like, "So and so's awesome vacation to Hawaii. So and so got married. So and so had a kid. So and so got promoted, and stuff like that." And you're just like, "Fuck! Why isn't my life going anywhere? What am I doing wrong?" And you realize, you know, what you don't realize at time is that all those people are not posting every day that they have those thoughts.
Or
every day they go to the job that they hate. Or
they're just posting the good stuff. Right. Or else Facebook is curating it away where you don't, it doesn't pop up on
you. You're seeing the highlight reel.
You know, I post, oh, fuck yeah, I got two boxes of pumpkin spice mini wheats. Yeah. Or instead of, I had to go to two different stores. Neither one had the bread that Panther likes, and so I had to buy something different that he might not like. And then I bought a jar of peanut butter, except I didn't look, and it was crunchy and not smooth, which he prefers, so I get to eat the crunchy. But that's okay, because I like crunchy peanut butter.
That was more than 140 characters.
I know. So my tweet is, fuck yeah, I was able to find some pumpkin spice
Wheaties. Right, yeah. You edit that down in the picture of the Wheaties.
Pumpkin spice must flow, because they're really good.
Which, yeah, he gave me one before the show. They're actually pretty good. Pumpkin spice mini wheats.
I got an open box. I'll share some with you when we pause to go to the next segment.
Yeah, I had one. Pretty good.
And it was just one of those things where... also, I did the video of the pumpkining. I don't know if I'd done it by the time we recorded last week, where me and Tesser ate a whole crap load of pumpkin spice bullshit, so you don't have to.
Oh, had no. Like 10 different fucking things, all pumpkin spice.
Actually, flavor. If we had recorded that week, I had a box of Hostess pumpkin spice Twinkies and a box of Hostess pumpkin spice cupcakes.
Now, I will say the pumpkin spice is okay. Some is much better than the others.
Blasphemy!
Why, you really like it, or you?
I don't care.
He's just being silly and reactionary.
Some of it has been awful, but Saro got this pumpkin spice cream cheese, like the Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Oh. I tried some, and it was like really good cream cheese frosting that you put frosting on like a cinnamon roll.
Oh man, that sounds good.
Oh, it was really good. It
actually does, yeah.
Yeah, but again, it's like. It tastes like, you know, a like less sweet cream cheese frosting, so it's barely sweet at all.
Saw this for a game of soldiers. Let's go get some fucking pumpkin spice.
Yeah. All right, so we are going to stop and save. We're going to play a song or two. Then we are going to get some pumpkin spice mini wheats and share them because they're tasty. But we're not going to eat them on recording.
We will now be playing Pumpkin Spice Blues, the new hit by Pepper Coyote. It was a pumpkin spice coyote.
Yes.
Which I'm going to tell him he needs to record a song like that.
Okay. We're creating content here, folks. Be right back. That was A Mystic Lineage from Freedom Planet, remixed by Esteban Bellucci and Tony Lays. The song remix is Dragon Valley 1. And Freedom Planet came out last year for Windows. It's a very solid Sonic-style platformer. It's really fun if you can get past the really dumb story and awful voice acting. Play Classic Mode. You'll thank me for it later. But we did try Pumpkin Spice Mini Wheats. They're very tasty.
They are very tasty.
Yep.
I'm not super crazy about pumpkin spice everything, but those were good.
Yeah. And again, this goes back to the video where Tesser and I had discussed doing the pumpkining. And he got a gift card because he was Employee of the Month. And so he's like, well, I know what I'm going to do. He went and purchased a bunch of pumpkin spice bullshit. And I had some pumpkin spice stuff here, like pumpkin cider, the pumpkin Twinkies, the pumpkin cupcakes.
Oh, God.
And we had pumpkin seed tortilla chips, pumpkin spice salsa, pumpkin spice popcorn, pumpkin pie chips, which are really terrible, pumpkin cheesecake cookies, pumpkin ginger snaps, two types of pumpkin cider, and the aforementioned Twinkies and cupcakes. And we all ate it on video for you. Go to my channel.
Like and subscribe.
JustAFox.com. It'll redirect you to my YouTube page. Ah.
So my sister went up to New Hampshire like this past weekend. And I texted her because I wasn't aware that she was going to be making a drive up. And I said, really? No. And I'm dead serious about this. How much to ship me some apples from up there and take a gallon of cider home for me, put it in your freezer, and I'll be out there in November to drink it. And I was dead serious.
Ship me some apples. I need apples. I need apple cider.
Well, they're completely different up there, at least the stuff you get off the farm versus what you get out of, like, Walmart or Kroger or any of the stores. There's a couple local orchards that we ate the crap out of kids. We devoured them. And they kind of set the standards on what we expect. And the same with the cider up there. If you've had something that's been pressed out of by a little farm versus what you get out of Kroger.
The mega pasteurized, factory farmed, blended everywhere.
Yeah, it's usually not very apple-y. It's kind of acidic and it's very flat compared to the stuff that's made out of the bruised and overripe apples and all the other stuff that, you know, where it's kind of heading towards fermenting that I grew up with.
Yeah,
it's completely different. As Sarah said, I have destroyed cider for him for forever because went up two Octobers ago and I broke him.
Nice. I'm okay.
Keep saying that, you might actually believe it.
Maybe one day. I will admit that I probably come across as slightly crazy right now.
Well, like, yes. This is your crazy time. Yes. My crazy time is coming in a couple months.
Yep. And we will all take care of it together. Yay!
Well, dueling the den, my crazy time is just past. I just finished getting the dealers onboarded for Fiesta. We actually have a list of dealers up on the website.
Oh, good.
So they're all up and listed. Everybody's paid. Everybody's onboarded. I've got everything wrapped up. So now the only changes I'll have to deal with is if somebody can't come and I have to hit up the waiting list.
Cool.
So, that's more or less taken care of. And then my craziness kind of just goes on hold till, well, I don't know. See.
Early March.
No, in prior years, pretty much January 1st was my starting gun for starting to chase them up. And it was a good, you know.
Aw, that's cute.
Starting time, because then I have to get them to tell me who your assistants are. Is there anything you want to change? All that happy hoo-ha. But now we've moved a couple weeks later. It's like, well, when do I start now?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't need to start nagging them two, three weeks earlier, you know. So, we'll see.
Yeah, the picture I just showed was a custom piece of jewelry. One of the vendors who decided to go to a different con instead of coming to mine, is still donating a very cute piece to the charity auction. This guy does custom silver and gold jewelry, and it's all very, very well made, and it's pulled nearly a grand, or in one case, $1,300 for a single piece. And he just posted that, by the way, I'm donating this to the charity auction. I'm like, really? Thank you. That's very nice. Guy's named Silverslinger, makes some really cool custom stuff.
Yep, he's got good stuff.
And, generally an all right guy. So we're going to get back to the emails. I guess I will read. Regarding age maturity, dear Notcast crew, Wolf in India here. This was actually in regards to what Jeeves the Roo from Scotland wrote about it regarding age and maturity. This won't be a long email, since I mostly agree with what you guys had to say about it being part hindsight and part experience. Sometimes the growing up happens after you're fully cooked. Personal experience. I wasn't responsible for myself, and in hindsight, mature enough until my parents went to prison while I was half a world away.
Wow. That's...
Boy, howdy. But the rest of it just came from what I experienced through my childhood and the conclusions I've drawn in hindsight. Biggest thing I've learned, if you see the drama storm, run. As mentioned in the title, y'all decide if you want to read this on air. It's quite possible I'm just tooting my own horn, but I felt like I wanted to add my 2 cents to the topic. Tired of selling credit card machines. Cade.
So when he says wolf in India, is that just like a nomenclature, or is that like, are you actually a wolf that lives in India?
He could be a wolf that lives in India. I mean, we've got Jeeves that lives in Scotland.
I know. Well, that's what I'm curious about, because I'm kind of curious how many different countries people write in from. So
that's a good question.
So look at his email address and see if it's a .in.
It's a from Gmail.
So okay, yeah, so it could be anywhere then.
Yeah.
So let us know, because I'm super curious if if that's just part of your greeting or if you're actually in.
No,
India.
You best read. It's Wolf in Indiana.
Maybe
it could be.
I'm joking.
Probably not. But
if it autocorrected, who knows?
Yeah.
So yeah, actually, that's a secondary topic. Hey, if you're listening to this and don't live in the United States, let us know. Where are you from? That's cool.
Yeah, it is really
cool.
How
far does this weird show we make reach?
You know, what we could do is Google Maps lets you set up a map that you can share. Mm-hmm. And then...
Oh, with the little pin points.
Yeah, and so people can add... We can set up a map and share it on our media to get our listeners to put little pin prints in it.
No, it's true.
I wouldn't mind doing that. That would be really cool. Even if you don't do like your exact address, like your generic town is good,
or just country. Really, it is always fun to go to your analytics on YouTube and be like, wait a minute, I had like 2 hits from Estonia.
Mm-hmm.
They have internet there. Yes, they do. But it's just like it's always fun when you go and you're like, I've got viewers from how many countries? How cool.
That's what I'm always curious, like at Fiesta, to see how many different countries people have come from. Where are they from? You know, I wouldn't mind if we did let that every year, get like a big cork board and push pins in.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know for my PonyCon, I've got people coming from Mexico at least, and some maybe some Central American countries.
I know we've got some Mexican furs that come up,
So, Fuzz.
Okay, let me pull up an email here. That was regarding age maturity archive. All right. Excuse me. Random happenings thoughts on college and moving. Hello again, Notcast. I'm writing in to throw a quick shout out, ask a couple of specifics to the resident publishing wolf, and to suggest a possible topic of discussion. I was wanting to write in earlier, but I've been weighted by a good deal of craziness. I just moved 2,000 miles away from home in Southern California to a college town in Western Michigan, and to call the Midwest a culture shock is pretty appropriate for me. I was wondering if the cast could share their thoughts and experiences with moving long distances. Although I know the subject has been briefly touched on before, along with how someone establishes himself in a new city or place in the country. I've been attending college here for 3 weeks now, and I still very much have the fish out of water feel. I also think this is a good topic to revisit because there's a number of younger furs of the fandom who just made the transition from home to college, and ignorant little socially awkward fluff butts like me might need some pointers on feeling more comfortable with their new living situation, or at the very least on how to make the discomfort more bearable. As a shout out, I would like to thank my wonderful husky, who I stumbled across 2 years ago. Thump. And decided to try and make a life with. He's also been incredibly accommodating and patient with me. What was that statistic about foxes and huskies that we saw?
They could take up to 5 times their body weight in their butt.
See? Very accommodating. Letting me use his place as a home base to move all of my things into college. and taking the time every week to make a 2-hour drive across Michigan to be with this nerdy tiger for the weekend. As a final note to Fuzz, I was curious as to whether he has any tips or techniques recommended for writers submitting anthology stories versus those who want to submit longer works like novels or novellas. I've submitted and published 2 short stories and 1 nonfiction essay to anthologies before, and I'm thinking about possibly trying to submit an entry to the next collection of Roar. But I'm also deep in the development of the work of an ongoing novel project that I'm hoping to submit and publish in for Planet or another furry publishing house when I have it finished, and I was wondering if there were any format, structuring, intricacies of communication, or other factors given by the writer that would make the publisher's life easier and make their work more desirable to put in print. Either way, I'm hopeful that I may get more of my work out there, and I'm getting ready to bundle up because winter is coming. A former Southern Californian tiger, Shoji.
Ooh, he's going from SoCal to Michigan in the wintertime.
Good luck, boy. You's gonna die.
God.
And Panther shows up out of nowhere to point out wool socks.
Yes.
Wool socks.
For a second, I thought you said wolf socks. It's like, no.
Yes.
Let's see. My fur. I've done a couple long distance moves.
Just a couple.
Just a couple. I first went from New Hampshire to Indiana. In some ways, that was moving out from home, though I had lived at college and then moved back home. So I had lived on my own for college. That was a bit nerve-wracking because I went from very small town to fairly small college town to decently large-sized college town, Bloomington, Indiana. It's the home of IU, and it's...
AU.
And it's really, really a lot larger than little tiny New Hampshire town. I was actually kind of scared to go out. I was afraid I was... This was pre-GPS, pre-smartphones, a lot of people having cell phones. I was kind of scared to go out and get lost and not be able to find my way back home. So I was kind of nervous to drive for like the long first couple of weeks that I was there to go beyond work, home, go to the grocery store. But going any further outside of those known paths, and I was actually really nervous. I imagine now if I needed to, I just put on Google Maps and tootle around and it would be no big deal. But back then, I was really scared about getting lost and not being able to find my way back to our house.
Excuse me.
A completely valid fear back in the day. Now it's just like, oh, now the biggest fear is your phone goes dead.
Yeah.
Then you're really fucked.
So that was a nerve-wracking shift. Moving to Texas was not such a big deal. Again, I did have the kind of fear about getting lost, but most of my commute between, again, there was a grocery store nearby. I was a little nervous about getting lost, but by that time, things like MapQuest and other stuff was starting to come into play. You could print out maps really easy, or at least starting to get area. They were mostly accurate. And again, I stuck to mostly major highways going to and from, home. Now, of course, the biggest move was when I moved from Texas to, Sydney, Australia, a rather small town outside of it, but you wouldn't know the name. So let's just say Sydney, for 3 years. That was rather interesting. I lived in a little place called Falconbridge, New South Wales. It is a very small town along a very narrow highway that goes kind of through this gap in the mountains west of Sydney. I wasn't too scared there about getting lost because, to be frank, there's really only one road. It goes from Sydney, it goes across the mountains, and it goes out into the grasslands beyond. Those little towns are like little strings of pearls along this road, and they're only about a mile deep on each side of this road because after that you have sheer cliffs. And you'd have to go, and the only thing past just off that highway just goes out to residential, and there's no real reason to go out there unless you're visiting someone.
Panther inputs that the solution to getting lost in a new town has long been to get a map go and mark the page where you live, and then mark the spot on that page.
Mm-hmm. So, culture shock out there, I really didn't have. I mean, I went out there for a couple visits before I moved.
I just say crikey a lot, I bet.
Actually, no. Maybe it's just from where I'm at. There's a lot of other slang, but not really crikey. Let's see. There was tracky dacks, which are tracksuit pants, and there were a whole bunch of others like that.
I know I've heard that before, but
that's tracky dacks.
Such a brilliant word. Tracky dacks. Put my tracky dacks on.
Oh, what's the other one? Arvo for afternoon. A couple of others I had never heard, not even in like some of the various media that's been cross
drop back. Bears.
Not actually, only a slightly thing for the tourists. So it wasn't, I got a couple soft nudges into it. I mean, I was a little bit nervous about going out on my own, but that wasn't so much about being lost. It was afraid of opening my mouth and betraying that I was a American. I was afraid to talk to people because that was in the middle of the Bush era, and he was not popular over there at all. So I was nervous to talk, nervous to let on that I was an American, basically kind of nervous to be that, you know, some Yankee hick over there. So all in all, not, there was some culture shock, but it was more interesting and not panic inducing. So, and then moved back to Texas. I actually had a harder time moving back to Texas than moving to Oz.
Huh. Was it just like the seasonal shift or?
No.
Like, oh God, I had two summers in a row. Fuck my life.
My birthday's in August and I've always had a summer birthday. So I did summer birthday things like swimming parties and barbecues and all that happy horse shit. And then suddenly my birthday is in August and that's the middle of winter in Sydney. And suddenly It was really disconcerting to suddenly have a winter birthday. But no, I left. I was gone for 3 years. And I would come back periodically, go to some of the meets. You know, I'd keep in vague contact, but it's hard when you're not local. And I came back and, like, social circles had shattered. And I didn't know how to find anybody except for Guardian. It just kind of, everything I knew
has... Because like Jack Torrance at the Overlook Hotel, Guardian has always been here.
So, yeah, I was really feeling lost when I came back. I couldn't find friends. Nobody really seemed to have time for me, or I couldn't find any of the meats. Like the Papa's meats had gone.
Yeah.
When I came back.
Papa's had gone.
Yeah. But then... And so I came back and suddenly my friends are gone. I didn't have any of my social circle. And I was starting to think of, well, crap, I might as well just wrap up what I'm doing here and think about moving back out east with my dad. Because I didn't have any of my social circle that was holding me here. And shortly when I started to seriously debate that, kind of got hooked up with the con. And that's what saved me staying in Texas, because I was not having a good time after I moved back. So of all of my hard moves, the initial move out was scary. Texas was not that bad. Sydney was kind of neat and not too terribly scary. But kind of coming back to Texas was the worst one. And I still lived here. I still had a mate here. I still had a house and all my cats. So I was more or less coming home, but it's like home was still there, but everything else in my life had evaporated.
Yeah.
And it kind of sucked.
Well, for me, my grand stories are, I was born in Arlington. I moved to Fort Worth. There was a brief stint where I ended up in Washington for about 5 months. And then I moved to Dallas, with a stint in Euless in between.
So you haven't left the Metroplex.
I have not stayed anywhere outside of DFW Metroplex for more than half a year at any one point in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I have not gone very far. From Middle Arlington to North Fort Worth to Euless to North Dallas. That's it.
Well,
you've had a couple of big moves, Fuzz.
So the biggest one still so far was small town in Scotland to New England, America.
How well do you remember? I know you were fairly young.
I was 8 years old, so most of people's brains, usually anything five and below, you don't really remember. But early childhood like that, 6, 7, 8, you have some memories. So I have some foggy memories.
Yeah. I mean, I was born in Mass. I moved about the same age to New Hampshire.
Yeah.
So I know, I remember a little bit about Mass.
So there's like, you know, I remember the primary school that I went to there. I remember playing on a golf course with my best friend, not hearing the guy say 4, and then a stinging pain in my shoulder blade as a golf ball wailed me. That literally just came back to me. And then I was like, huh, I've had problems with my right shoulder blade my whole life. And now I'm like, I wonder if that's why. It really hurt. Lift the big bruise. Anyway, so I have like a scattering of memories like that. And I still have that sort of lately, last few years, I've been getting that sort of longing to go back. Not to live there, but, you know, I want to visit my aunt and uncle in northern England. And I just want to, like, walk on, like, a dusty old road or something with the scraggy, half-growing Scottish grass and, you know, our rocky, pebble-filled, air quote, beach. And, you know, I'd like to explore some of that. I want to do the memory lane thing and see some areas that I haven't, I hadn't actually been to when I lived there, just to do some exploring. I mean, I get it's hard to remember first moving to America now. I guess there probably was some culture shock. I know that I was a kid and I was being picked on because of my accent, and it eventually went away, which I was grateful for at the time. And of course, now as an adult, I'm like, fuck, everyone in America as adults loves Scottish accents. It thinks they're sexy. Like, oh,
you could always
fucking
do
Sean Connery.
Always do a John Barrowman and grow it back.
Yeah. You know, actually what's funny is that apparently I used to do what John Barrowman does.
Is what, back and forth?
His accent comes back when he's around his parents. And I can, like, Tyrion has actually said this to me. You go Scottish when you talk to your mom and when she was alive. And
when you're mad, you'll just, ugh.
Actually, yeah. Apparently, it will come out a little bit if I'm really angry. But when I was, when I would talk to my mother, some of the Scottish tinge to my voice and some of the different words and stuff like that, you know, like saying we instead of little or small. You know, this is a wee lad.
Oh, you get me together with my sister and my dad, and the Mass accent comes back.
Yeah.
And we start talking really short and really clipped.
Park the car in Harvard Yard.
See, that's only a very small
which is apparently
part.
Impossible because Harvard doesn't have a yard or something.
Yeah, there's only a very small part of Boston that talks like that. It's a lot more clipped.
I just know it from from Diamond Joe Quimby, the mayor of Springfield.
He sounds like a Kennedy, and not a lot of Bostoners
yes.
sound like Kennedys.
Henceforth, today shall we know it as Marge Simpson Day. Sir, this is already Veterans Day. It could be two things. It's like one of my favorite little. So it's just, sorry, random voice acting there.
So, yeah. I know that trend.
Yeah. And, you know, there's this funny things because, like, in Britain, we say the phone is engaged if you get a busy signal. But in America, the word engaged only means you're getting married. Not many people seem to use the word engaged as in a, I'm otherwise engaged, like I'm busy doing something.
I hear it in the workplace when it says that you're not super, involved with your work, like you're doing it kind of half-assed or skimming.
You're not engaged
with
yeah.
the game or the movie or the thing.
You're
but
not really
using
into
it for telephones is not something done over here. So I was, the backstory is not important. I was working at Montgomery Ward and I was trying to call one line to get buzzed into a security office and the line was busy. So I called the operator and they said, you need to call the other place. I said, I tried, but it's engaged. What? I said, it's engaged. What? And then I mentally did the little flow chart kind of like gear shift. And I said, and then I put on my best American accent and said, the line's busy. Oh, I'll buzz you in. And I was like, couldn't just buzz me in when I asked right off the bat. But then I was like, that was the point where I retired engaged from my vocabulary for that particular use. It's like, okay, Americans don't understand that. Okay.
I worked on one particular contract, and I had this one Irish guy with the most beautiful Irish accent I've ever heard that kept calling in. And we had the system with our phones where you could, there was two jacks. There's one that went to your headset and the other one was supposed to be for supervisors or training. So I would get this guy to call in, or sometimes the gal who shared the desk with me would get him, and we'd start going and we'd unplug our phones and plug it into the training jacks and just kind of sit there and go, at each other.
Tell me about your infrastructure issues. All I want.
No, this is actually doing an architecture program, so I'm walking him through how to, like, change dimensions on windows and draw a peaked roof.
I was thinking of the you made me think of the Siri parody early on. There was the guy with a really thick Scottish accent trying to talk to Siri. It's like, I want a pint of lager and a packet of crisps, and the that she couldn't. I'm sorry, I cannot understand you. It's like, just forget the crisps. All I want is a pint of lager. It's this whole thing. But anyway, Google it. It was funny. My other move, my second big one, was from Florida to here in Dallas.
Well, there's also moving from Florida down to up in Connecticut, was it?
Well, Connecticut to Mississippi, which was moving from the Northeast to the Deep South. That was a bit of a culture shock. I was a teenager. I remember my first day in junior high school there when the kids were like, well, where did you move from? Connecticut. Oh. And they got kind of standoffish because,
Yankees.
We don't like them Yankees down here. And then I said, but I'm originally from Scotland. And then they went, oh, all right. And they kind of leaned in again, you're not actually a Yankee. Okay, that's okay. And this is an era in American history where we didn't hate all the foreigners. So the fact that I was from Scotland was all right.
Well, besides, you're not cans, you're okay.
I'm not what?
You're not brown people, so.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole double standard there with that. If you're a white immigrant, it's all right. But, and then moving from Mississippi to Florida was not too bad. Just humidity. I was grateful to move here because less humidity, less mold, less allergy problems.
Just fantastic. Stopping it when I'm at Meffet and after I get back. And what I thought were dry clothes when I was there. And I get back and I open my bag and I reach in to start pulling stuff like clean laundry and stuff out. And the whole entire bag feels damp, like it hasn't finished a spin in the dryer.
I discovered this difference early on when Tyrone and I were dating, when we were still living apart, because he would take a shower and then he would hang the towel up. And this is when he was visiting me in Florida. And I was like, why did you leave that wet towel there instead of throwing it in the hamper? He's like, oh, I'm letting it dry. I'm like, it's not going to dry. This is Florida. It's just not going to dry hanging like that. It's just going to stay wet. And, of course, that gets Texas, and it's like, oh, here you can throw a towel over the shower, and it will actually dry off because the air is not full of fucking moisture all the time.
Yeah, we're not America's dick.
Yeah. So the that move, as an adult, not a kid, just quickly adapting into school and stuff like that, was actually a really big deal for me because I was leaving behind my only family, my mom and my sister that were in the States, and at that point a fairly good sized community of furries and friends that I had made. And I was luckily not leaving behind my job because I was able to get a position in the same company out in Irving, at a call center out there. But it was a big deal for me because I was like the only people I knew in Dallas where I'd met you once. Mm-hmm. But I knew Guardian because I've known Guardian since 98. And, obviously I'm moving in with Tyrone.
6 degrees of Guardian.
So Guardian sort of becomes the spoke, the little nexus of my wheel to start meeting people out here. And yeah, it all ended up for the best in the end. I ended up meeting a lot of folks and getting involved with the local community, and now I have friends out here. But yeah, it was a big deal coming out here and feeling like, well, I'm kind of starting over, you know, and I don't know where everything is. And of course, like you said, the first thing Guardian told me was buy a Mapsco. Because this was before smartphone. You could do MapQuest at home in 2005, but I still had a flip phone.
Yeah, and I carried an Atlas in the car for a very long time.
And Mapsco was like, everybody swore by Mapsco here in DFW at that time. Like it was like your standard issue with your 10-gallon cat and your shotgun when you drove over the border.
10-gallon cat?
Hat.
Like, 10-gallon cat would be awful big.
I've seen some. That's a big pussy.
Well, for a large area like this, you need to at least have the major arteries and highways mapped, mm-hmm. even if the roads would be rapidly out of the little roads would be well out of accuracy.
I learned in the first year that I was like, you know what? I'm just going to never get on 635. As long as I can avoid doing it.
You don't want to die?
I don't want to die. I don't want to deal with the traffic.
I moved to this area just to avoid 635. My job was up here.
Yeah.
I got tired of driving from the other side of Dallas across 635 to get to it. So I did it just to avoid 635, and that's how I ended up in this part of town.
Our first apartment, we lived on the Dallas-Garland border. I worked in Irving in Las Colinas, so about 18 miles away. So I had to take 635 every fucking day.
Yeah.
And half the time I ended up I started taking back roads. I started taking Royal Lane, whoosh, all the way west.
Yeah, I used to live out by Abrams off of.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So
we were at Jupiter Northwest Highway.
Yep.
Which Northwest is like right the border between the two towns. And the reason I lived that so far away from work is because at that time Tieran worked in Terrell.
Mm.
That's a bit of a drive.
So yeah, it was much further mileage. But he got there in the same amount of time as I got to work because he was going against the flow of traffic, going out of DFW mm-hmm. instead of into it. It worked for a while, and then we were able to move closer in when he changed jobs. But, you know, but that all worked out for the better. I think we've actually just relayed our personal stories. I don't know if any of that is useful as an actual, you know, reach out to friends, get involved with
clubs,
search for the local mailing list, forum, live journal community,
and
Telegram group nowadays for whatever area you're in.
And like, look at your campus. Even if it's not furry, there's got to be clubs of something that you're interested in. Usually most campuses have an anime club,
mm-hmm.
or mine had a medieval society, which is basically medieval LARP nerds. There's got to be something on campus that you want to do, and that's a good way to meet people and do stuff.
And I'm not sure what the distances involved are, but you're in Michigan, so there is a furry con there. There's Motor City Fur Con in Novi, Michigan, which is usually sometime in April. So I would go ahead and Google that and see if that's like a drivable distance from where you're at. He has some publishing-related questions also. For anthology submitting, the big, big thing is read the submission guidelines and follow the instructions carefully, because it's different editors for each of the different books. Some of them don't really care what kind of format they get. Some of them are really specific, and they're like, margins have to be this size, and I want this font size and this type of font and this file format and stuff. I would say the doc is a pretty universal format. You can also send docx. Most people can read that nowadays. Sometimes it does some goofy shit in conversion. I would say stick with doc format. Don't send like ODT. The first time I saw that, I had to Google it because I was like, what the fuck is that? That's OpenOffice's extension. That's not really a standard, so not everyone, like, you can open that in Word, but it may or may not do shit to the formatting.
Yeah, it'll fuck the formatting, maybe.
I would say in general, also, don't put a whole bunch of formatting into your manuscripts, you know. Don't have everything just so a certain way, you know, what you consider ready for print, because we're going to toss all of that and do our own typography on it. So keep it as basic as possible. No bolding, no underlining, limited use of italics.
Usually those are for, like, internal thoughts.
Yeah, some people use them for internal thoughts, psychic communication, if you have that in your book. People also make the mistake of using it for emphasis, and that sometimes works in a sentence, like, you're no, really, you know, and that would be italic or something like that. The problem with that is that if you're a good enough writer, you should be able to read your words and understand where the emphasis is from the context of what you're reading. You shouldn't have to have, like, italics every fucking dialogue line, you know? So that kind of use of italics should be very, very sparing. Also, very sparing on exclamation points. People like to put exclamation points fucking everywhere sometimes. It's like, you only ever use one. You never type three. This isn't a chat room or a forum. If you've got, like, two exclamation points in a 50,000-word manuscript, then you're fine. Much more than that, you're exclaiming too much. So
be, I say.
Yeah, exactly. Be a little conservative with that. And use a standard boring font, because you're not concerned about the design aspect of it. Your publishers will be at the end. You basically, your default Times New Roman 12 size is perfectly acceptable.
They'll do all the tweaking in the format.
We do all the tweaking.
So you're saying I shouldn't send my manuscript in Wingdings?
No. Don't use the tab button to make indents. Go ahead and set up a paragraph style in Word where the first line is already indented by, like, a quarter of an inch. Any hard formatting in that can be a pain in the ass to deal with when you're doing your formatting and your typography.
And you're cleaning it all up, it can be a pain to pull out.
Yeah. So don't do the tabbing like that. Set that in as a paragraph style. Don't do a bunch of hard returns between paragraphs to separate them. Just do it all single spaced with the first line indented to indicate where the paragraphs are. So that all sort of, like, basics it. So, like, I'm not looking like, because the way I operate, everyone does it a little different, is I take it and I usually throw it through a converter and toss it onto my Kindle. And then I read that and I edit it like that when I'm on the train or something like that. And if it has, like, a bunch of formatting shit in there, and it's all, it tends to look all fucked up. And other people have other ways of doing it, especially when you, like, drag it over to InDesign and stuff like that. If you got a bunch of crap in there,
it can cause issues.
Yeah, Word throws a ton of that.
Word's awful as far as throwing in extra stuff in the background. It causes me a nightmare at work.
Yeah, especially if you're writing a website and, like, their HTML code is so fucking full of extraneous bullshit.
Just their plain text is full of extraneous bullshit. You copy-paste that into certain editors, it pulls all kinds of extra crappy formatting with it. You have to go in and basically drop it into, like, a plain text editor, strip it out before you can even use it. Word's good for some things. It's very bad for others.
And the other thing I'll tell you is that I'm also more interested in a single volume story that can stand alone. Less interested in this trilogies. Is the first part of a trilogy. This is the first part of my 10-book epic. And the reason being, there's a ton of people that start something like that and then will burn out or flake out or just vanish off the face of the earth. And it, even
And then
typically with trilogies, and then you're left hanging, and your readers are left hanging, and our customers are left hanging. So to get your foot in the door, at least, and to know that you're somebody of whose writing is of quality, and that you're someone that we can work with professionally, you want that first book to be self-contained, maybe leave a door open at the end for a sequel or a couple of hints early on. Don't wrap it all up in a little bow. But you generally want it to be a self-contained story that wraps up satisfactorily. So that's going to get you in the door. My personal taste is more for science fiction or slice of life. I'm not a big fan of fantasy, but a lot of people like fantasy in the fandom, so it's definitely something I can entertain. That's some basics there. Go to our website. I have submission guideline links there, and feel free to shoot me a message through the contact link if there's anything not on there that you that I have not answered. So
sounds good.
All right, Shiva, crush this young boy's spirit.
Aww.
Next email.
I know. It's bringing it up. Let's see. Which one?
Jobs within the fandom.
Ah. Hold on. Dear Notcast, you can call me Hashna. I'm over halfway through high school. It's now time for me to start looking for a job. My plans were to hopefully work with furries for around 5 years before signing my freedom away to the military. But if I liked the job too much, I was going to stay. I do realize I'm still young and things can and do change. My question to you is, what jobs are there in the fandom? Sadly, I lack the artistic skills to be an artist and have yet to even try fursuit construction, so those are out. I also would like to have some furry coworkers. Currently, I was looking at applying at Bad Dragon, but they are located in Phoenix, Arizona, and I hate their hot weather. I'm from West Washington State. My dream was to move to the Midwest around Michigan, or as I like big cities, Buffalo, not upstate New York, but I would be willing to go where the job is. P.S. I just saw something. Is fursuit making assistant a thing? So there's not a lot of people that do the fandom for full-time jobs. You've got folks like Bad Dragon. I don't know if even they do it full-time.
They do. They're big enough.
But they're also a group of friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is a handful of fursuit creators that do it full-time.
And I know that there was folks like, the one that's out here in Fort Worth, they were a guest of honor, and now I'm blanking on them. I'm going to feel real awful.
Tiffany Ross?
No, not. They're fursuit creators.
Oh, DreamWorks?
Yeah, Dream Visions.
Dream Visions.
They put out an ad for people looking to help part-time to do, like, resin casting for, like, bits and parts. So that would be something, but again, not full-time.
And Jaren got that job, and it is full-time.
Yeah.
But that's the one fursuit assistant job. I think there's not going to be a lot of those.
Fursuit, there's not a lot of return on investment. People usually make enough to barely scrape by just paying for themselves. Because, yes, well, a fursuit does run $3,000 or so for a full one or more. That's a lot of man hours of basically minimum wage. And there's a lot of cost in parts and fur and all this stuff. So the actual return on investment for the fursuit maker is not really all that high when you factor in how many hours it takes to make a particular piece. You've got stuff like Fuzz does that does publishing, but even for a plan, it's not a full-time job yet.
No.
There's writers that do it on the side. I don't think any of them write full-time without holding down a job, but I could be wrong.
Kyle Gold
does. Yeah,
he's the only one, as far as I know. There are quite a few artists, but with writers, there's but just
again,
the
one. They have two incomes as well.
Yeah, his husband has a job outside of it, and I don't know if they could subsist if he was on his own, just subsist
so
off his own.
We're just gonna crush your dreams right here. There are no full time jobs in the furry fandom that an unskilled non artist can take.
I mean,
you can start working on your art. You can start working on your
fursuit.
Your fursuit making capacity. You can start working on being creative. But you are not going to find a job in the furry community that will pay your way through life from the start.
I mean, unless you're going to start a business and start vending something. And then you're probably going to be vending at more cons than just furry ones. You'd be basically be a vendor. So.
And again, that's a crapshoot.
Yeah. Your best bet is probably to find friends and try to work wherever they're working so you have furry coworkers, and go from there.
Yeah. Because you ain't going to make money going into cons. You ain't going to make money just being a rando.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Work on your skills. If you don't think your art is good enough, well, there's no reason to not start. To not get working on your art.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I ended up with a bunch of furry coworkers is because we all referred each other for jobs at the same company.
Yeah.
But it's not like it's a furry company and it's a furry office and we're all wearing ears and tails or anything like that. We're just a bunch of people that know each other that happen to work together and know each other outside the office.
So, yeah, make some furry friends, see where they're working, and maybe have some fun with that, but... There's not a way to do that in this fandom. I mean, and Kyle is a singular instance and an anomaly. He's very good at what he does, but he only is able to do it because his partner has a job that helps support them.
He can do it because if here he has web toes.
Well,
no, kidding.
I'm able to do audiobook stuff because Panther has a real job. So, I mean, it's just one of those things where, yeah, I mean, they're outlier situations, but I certainly don't generate near enough income to support myself if I was by myself doing the furry audiobook thing.
Is that pumpkin spice things you had to stock up on?
No, Sarah was running to Sonic and had to run to the grocery store.
Oh.
He brought you some...
So he brought me a Sonic burger and a drink.
Cool. Well, we're going to wrap this up so you can eat that here in just a second. The last email is, hey, I saw this funny sign on the side of the road and had to share. The individual's name is Bonner Gaylord for Raleigh, North Carolina City Council. What a gaylord.
Nice. That's a heck of a name.
I'd vote for the Lord of the Gays.
Depends on his political standing.
Then it's again, like City the Council. Lord of the Flies, but with more sparkles.
Yep.
And less flies.
So, goodness me. So we have one more week. Whereupon we will be able to record, and then we'll have a short break until the end of the month. What do we got? What do we got?
Oh, we just got 10 more emails in. We got to keep going.
Well, we do need to start talking about episode 300.
Yes, indeed. Episode 300 here very soon, looking to be the second week of November.
Thanks if we're to con able schedules. To
get everything.
Yeah. So at this point, I'm going to say write us in with some suggestions of what you think we should do to celebrate our tricentenary.
Whatever that word is.
Actually, I think that's correct. But
yeah. Our
300th episode.
300
episodes. Feels like we should do something to commemorate it. And the other part of me is like, let's just treat it like another episode, yeah, and then have an amazing, massive 301 episode. Thing.
So, yeah, 300 episodes. Give us some ideas, folks. We'll see what we can do. Use some of those fat Patreon bucks to
do something
to buy a pound of blow and
hookers.
No, I don't think we could purchase anywhere near that.
A pound of hookers? I would want.
You could get a pound
more.
Of hookers.
I would want more than that because that sounds illegal.
All right. Also, so contacts. You can contact us at notcast@foxduffers.com. You can follow us on Twitter at notcast. You can find us on Fur Affinity very occasionally at notcast. You can find us on Tumblr, notcast.tumblr.com. That is how you can send us anonymous questions. If you look at the notcast.tumblr.com page, it's the question mark in the upper right.
Like and subscribe or something.
We don't produce YouTube content.
Watch and follow.
There's Patreon. Patreon's important. Yes, Notcast.
Yes, patreon.com/notcast. there was that data breach that
they had. Make sure you change your passwords, folks.
I had to change my password, and I assumed that my information's out there in the wind, but whatever. That's fucking life.
Don't make your password iffy for a fag.
No.
We got hacked. No.
Thankfully, we did not. We did not see a drop in, like, I have a dude I know whose Patreon was basically gutted because a lot of people canceled the cards that were associated with it.
Oh, God.
And so, like, his patron, he had, like, maybe nearly $100 worth of declined things when he only gets, like, $125 a month.
Jesus Christ.
Man. So it was just like, hey, this was paying for my server stuff. Not this month! Whoops!
Oh, that sucks.
So, yeah. Patreon. Patreon's still a very good platform for creators to be able to create. And we greatly appreciate everybody who is a part of our Patreon.
Base.
Patreon base, yeah. Now we're going to be like, our Patreon family. We love you like our cubs, except we don't have any, so go away. No.
And also creepy.
Yes. But thank you guys very much for the support you do. We have a handful, far more patrons than I ever actually kind of expected. But, so you guys rock. And I think that really about wraps it up.
Yep.
Shiva's got a burger in front of her.
Sarah was nice to me.
Fuzz is trying to steal it.
Yeah.
So there's wolves. Going to be violence in my office.
Hashtag wolves.
So on that note.
Oh, and you'll see Saverin at Nightmare Nights in just weeks. A couple weeks.
What was our new sign off?
Good night and don't fuck the snake.
There we go.
Good night.
And don't fuck the snake.